Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post-Credit Scene podcast.
Yeah, he's got cracking. He's getting down to the wire. I got gas though. That was enough for me.
Have you never found a joke
like?
So awful.
You missed this one. This one was so bad.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It was that bad.
It was that bad, yeah.
But he was intentional. I know this guy. That was an intentional bad joke.
Sam's one.
Sam's one really sucked.
What did he say?
Sam said, oh, he's breaking. It's so bad.
When did he say that?
Just
no! It's because it's bad.
Yeah.
It is bad. Just like yours was bad. Yeah. But yeah, we should get to the wire.
Yeah.
No, today, one of the things that we plan to do in the future for the pod is to every so often revisit some of the shows that are considered the greatest of all time and spread that out across the year. I think that's a cool way of sort of retrospectively looking back at some of our greatest moments of TV. And we've all got diverse tastes as well, so mm-hmm. The cast for that particular episode will kind of diversify as well, which will be fun. But the first one for me is the episode, or is one of the TV shows that I consider to be the greatest of all time.
Yes, sir.
Before we get into that, let's intro the hosts.
The fact that he's cradling chicken right now, yeah, I want to say something really
mean. The N word.
I don't want us to get banned again.
She's getting a Hogwood bag. KKK.
KKK.
Manny, how'd you do?
Good, my broski.
What are you looking forward to today?
In
terms of the episode?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about the Why Are You, man. Enjoy part of it.
We've never actually given it a whole episode itself. It's always been like little sections and segments and little conversations here and there rather than like a fun deep dive, so it should be cool.
Yeah. And if I'm honest, one pod episode is not enough to fully dive into the greatness of the Why.
Could have done like three Sinners eps, to be fair, so there's that. You know what I'm saying?
10, bro. Director's cut.
Jason.
Yes, sir.
The biggest Idris Elba hater that I know.
I'm not a hater. Like, guys, don't put that tag on me, please. I do like him. We just have to be honest about him. That's all I'm going to say.
Maybe we'll save that take again for later on in the episode. You all right, though?
Yeah, I'm good. Excited to get into this episode.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
I was going to call you something else, but I won't do it. I'll save that for off the mic. Pasola, how'd you do?
What are you
going to
call me, baby?
I was going to call you, but...
Well, thank you. I don't understand that reference.
You might have some editing to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It took a while for everyone.
Yeah, I'm well. Firstly, we haven't had this lineup in God knows how long.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I haven't bored like this in ages.
Yeah.
Horse let Jason up.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Let him out of his cage.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't getting out. No.
Well,
what's going on?
Lema from where?
You know, I thought
we was on the same bubble.
I thought he fired me.
No,
that's what I'm gonna say.
No, this is what's really funny.
He fired me.
We had a different plan, for the episode, the group chat, I don't know. Jace just suddenly started joining an alliance, like that episode in the office. Just wanted to join an alliance. He was like, "Oh, I'm on the same team as Hassam." Mind you, earlier in the week, Hassam sent out a meeting link to everyone, bar Jason, So the fact that only a married message above is, oh God, he done kicked me out of the group. to later being like, oh, I'm on Hoss's team. No. Then Hoss's response being, I'm not even on this episode. I said, Jace, all of this for what?
I'm going to add a little bit of context because the original idea that Gaz put in the group, because he said like, oh, we could have two teams where it's like Biz and Manny and then Jason and Hoss. And I thought, oh, that's the structure we're sticking with. All right. All I'm going to say is, that doesn't take away from the embarrassment I have faced that day, but hey.
That made me laugh a lot, man. Guys, how are you?
I'm all right. Looking forward to talking about The Wire, man. It's a show that I think is one of the greatest of all time, to be fair to you.
Period.
And I think there's so much to talk about within the context of the show that you probably won't even be able to cover it in its full entirety. But it should be fun. For me, it's a legacy, cultural sort of defining show, which laid a precedent for other shows to not necessarily always use the same premise of the story, but just in terms of layered storytelling for TV shows, I think it's one of those seminal shows. Similar to like The Sopranos. And we spoke about this in the previous episode with, of course, he called us TV bros, me and Jason, because we like those type of shows in terms of The Wire, The Sopranos, Succession, Game of Thrones.
So good TV.
The Bear.
Well, yeah.
Don't do that.
Whereas, you know, he said he preferred growing up on sort of sitcoms and Friends and The Office. So he flipped it and turned a snob on us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Get a load of that guy. Like, what the hell?
I don't know. Sorry for lacking good TV.
I do want to say why he's not here. He gave us the worst Mount Rushmore I've ever heard in my life.
What was it again?
Never.
Yeah.
Don't believe it.
You're so unnecessary.
Friends, The Office. Game of Thrones, The Office, and then he couldn't give us a fourth.
He said he's more of a film guy.
Yeah, no. I can't lie.
That's actually such a terrible Mount
Rushmore. That's Mount Rushmore, by the way. That's such a snob. Bear in mind, he went last, so they already said some like big hitters, and that's what he said.
The thing is, yeah, I'm not even against like those shows, but I think to be like, yeah, that's my top three. I haven't got anything else. That's very funny.
Yeah, stuck on three is crazy. Stuck on
and three. That's the three of choice.
I can't wait to listen to the episode so I can hear you guys' Mount Rushmore.
Oh, you probably have a fairly good idea. The Wire, created by David Simon, who's a former journalist, kind of used this show as his lens and window into... It is journalism, in a sense, the way it sort of constructs society, Baltimore, and the American system as a whole, which I think was really, really cool. What was your... Each of you, quickly, if you can, what was your sort of introduction to the show? How did you get into it? What made you start watching it? Manny, maybe start with yourself, sir.
It was on BBC Two, I believe. And yeah. I think just like my brothers used to watch it. And I remember I never caught on to it at the time. I ended up actually, the first time I watched it from beginning to end was via DVD. One of my brothers, she got me, what's so funny?
Sorry.
I know why you're laughing. one of my brothers got me the DVD of the Wire, and I rinsed it out. I think I used to watch it like every year, at least one time, when I was a lot younger. But yeah, mainly through like word of mouth, my friends watching it. Obviously being like teenagers, we just love like anything to do with crime, gang, and all this type of stuff.
Fitness statistics.
Yeah. One of them.
What's going on in the episode today?
Yeah. I can really tell the vibe.
It's gonna be a lot of bullshit.
Yeah. So that's how I got into The Wire. Word of mouth, and just really enjoyed it from when I first started watching it.
No, me. Parents. Like
really,
that's super interesting.
With them, like
really,
Drips and Drabs, kind of like that's my introduction. But I didn't watch it fully until kind of like what, like mid 2010s maybe.
Oh, still a good.
How old were you when your parents were watching it?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I genuinely don't remember. Like, because I don't remember a lot of that, but I just do remember the. I don't know, the second season, that's the doc season, right?
Yeah.
I just remember kind of like watching that with my parents. So I can't remember how old I was because I don't remember what year did the show come out? Like
2002.
Kids, 2002. Yeah.
Oh. 2002. So I must have been.
I think like for like BBC, it would have came out years after that.
Yeah, because the show never really.
I wasn't.
But yeah, you were. Kicked you on.
I
yeah, you
was not in the UK. I was in Germany, so we're watching dubbed. I don't know. Oh, so it must have been like 2003.
I don't even want to be disgusting, but watching a classic show like that dubbed must be hell.
That's disgusting. What do you want me to do?
I don't know a word of English.
I don't know a word of English.
Wait, how did you learn English? Via TV as well? Or did you learn at school?
I learned it at school. And then obviously when I moved here, it was kind of like learning from scratch, just being in school, people.
What age did you start learning English?
So I moved, 8 maybe?
That's and
I
really impressive.
Interesting, yeah.
English is an easy language to learn though, I'll say that.
I say,
To be fair, I started learning English when I was 7.
Yeah, but I don't think it's easy.
No, it's easier in comparison to other languages. Yeah. Like for example, like if I do take German is, I hate German as a language, and French. They've got too many rules.
Yeah, I gave up that in secondary school quickly, man.
Yeah, and then, yeah. English though, like to fully like speak it conversationally, it took me about 3 months.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
So you were actually a smart kid. What are you doing here?
I don't know about a smart kid. Wow.
What is wrong with
okay, I can't even lie to you. I'm just in that mood today. Yeah. I'm not even going to pretend. I'm just in that mood. I'm sorry. It's not going to stop. I can't lie.
You know.
I'm doing it because I love film and I love TV.
Big prayer.
Yeah, I love
that. When did I start watching The Wire? I watched The Wire actually quite recently. I think I watched a couple of episodes when I was younger, just like with my siblings, but I watched it properly in 2022.
Okay.
All three. I was just like, you know what? I was in a mood of just watching TV shows that I considered the best.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see why they were the best. And it was the only one I watched out of the list that I actually remember, but also being like, oh, they might have even sold it a bit short here. Like, this is truly the greatest show of all time. Like, this is crazy good. I'm watching it and being like, oh, there are tons of shows that exist because of this show. You could feel like there were direct comparisons and certain things. But yeah, I watched it quite recently, 2-3 years ago. Yeah.
Sick.
When did you watch it?
Initially during university. And then afterwards, I did a rewatch a year and a half ago. And I ended up doing like a whole load of like different like character breakdowns because there's so many interesting characters.
Yeah, you love Proctor Jonas, sure.
Who?
Is it Proxy?
No.
What is it, Proxy?
No.
Oh, sorry.
I literally said... Nigga, what's going on here? Make me go. This feels like an episode of Black Mirror. I feel like I'm being gaslit.
This is
Bernie's all over again.
What did you say?
I said Proctor. Yes. Is that wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong.
Proposition.
It's prop job.
Oh, prop.
Yeah.
That's what it was short for.
Yeah. Proposition.
You've repeated so many times. Just tell me I'm still wrong.
No, because I couldn't hear you. That's what I was asking. Yeah.
Proposition, because he always offered
a proposition.
And you're tag teaming him. Look at how you're fucking laughing. Look at how you're smiling.
Earlier you said you were looking forward to a tag team.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
Save that for after hours. Propositions, I think there's so many great characters that you can dive into, and there's some characters I even haven't had a chance to yet. But yeah, we'll get into that.
he's just a sick individual.
Like. Yeah, sick nigga with sick thoughts. What we'll do, we'll start off with a sort of season by season look. Manny, this is your bag.
Yeah.
Off you go.
First season, I think it starts off with the crime scene.
Can I just say that opening scene? Fucking fantastic.
Yeah, we've been with McNulty talking to, I can't remember, some random...
Yeah.
Who was the character that died that they were speaking about? I can't remember his name.
Either.
But yeah, they were speaking about, talking about a character that just passed away. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't watched it for a while, but the whole conversation is that them lot are in the corner playing dice, and this one guy always used to steal money. Every time. And one day somebody just got sick of it and just shot him. And McNulty just asked the questions, why did you carry on playing with him? Because this is America.
Yeah.
That is what we do. And I feel like it was such a great scene to introduce us to the world of Baltimore.
And introduce America using McNulty as the window into the perspective of the white aspects of America who may not understand why he's doing what
these
he's
things happen all the time. It's like, yeah, this is, we've been living like this. This is
the way life is for us.
Life is, and that was such an interesting way to start.
And even then, they still might not understand why parts of Baltimore do what they do.
But you understand that they understand it.
Yeah.
Like, because in the characters was there.
And I think there's now it's tempting to like deep dive, but the scene with what's Avon's nephew's name again?
D'Angelo. Yeah.
D'Angelo. The scene of him using the chess.
Yeah.
To teach the young cats about the system in America, as well as the hierarchy within the Baltimore crime family and then the drug syndicate as a whole.
Is that the same point when they're talking about chicken nuggets?
No, I think it's different.
I really like that one. That was my favourite scene.
What was that?
When he's talking, he's like, because they were eating chicken nuggets. He's like, I bet the person that made chicken nuggets is like one of the richest men on earth. They're like, no, I bet you they basically have no money.
Yeah. And it's just talking children,
about,
man.
Yeah, and it was just talking about like, no, he stole the ideas from this, and I was just basically using that to explain the drug game. It was so good. I loved it. It was just like, oh.
Yeah. Season one. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. That's what we're here. It's nice to go off on a tangent. But yeah, great introduction to the season and to the city of Baltimore, which essentially is like the main character of The Wire, the city itself. And McNulty being like our essential window into what's going on. And every season, as you know, is structured differently, or the topic area is on a different part of Baltimore. And the first season is heavily involved in terms of like the police department and the criminals on the streets of Baltimore. And yeah, man, it was just like, it was a great way for us to be introduced to what The Wire is.
Any highlights from season one that stand out to you?
Apart from like the ones that already mentioned, the chess scene.
We've done this before, Manny.
Yeah.
The Bunk McNulty scene, the crime investigation scene.
Was that the first scene? The first
season? No, it's like the third episode or something.
But it's in the first season.
Fuck.
Yeah, yeah, season one.
First season.
I thought that was
right, season five.
Really,
it's nah,
a great
nah,
show.
Nah. Season one, bro.
Okay.
Like it's so further into the story.
Season one, that scene is magnificent. Yeah. And the layers of sort of detail that went into that, where they had to even seek advice and counsel from actual police officers who confirmed the fact that a lot of police officers use profanity such as fuck within the context of crime scene investigations and so on, and the different layers of what fuck that one word can mean just based on tone and based on how you actually say the word was beautifully done in that episode, because it told us so much about their characters and what they were seeing just through one word said differently. Great writing.
Great acting as well, because I feel like you have to do it in a certain way that for us to actually understand
that, to actually get the context of what their fuck means.
Yeah.
Okay, so who plays Bunk in the series? If you could search that for me. Because Dominic West plays McNulty, and Dominic West is a really, really, really talented actor.
Have you seen the video of Dominic
West? Yeah, SBTV.
Rapping with...
No way.
Yeah.
I don't know why it exists.
But yeah, it doesn't make sense.
There's no context to that.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. He's a really good theatre actor as well.
Great theatre actor.
Wendell Pierce.
Superb.
Yeah.
Them two are really, really good. Any other highlights for you, Jason? Or is there something that you wanted to talk about from season one that kind of stands out to you?
Because I'm just doing a rewatch of it at the moment. And
what kind of timing is that? That's crazy timing.
I know. Like, I'm on season two now. But, like, the one that really stood out to me, and I don't think many people talk about it, is Wallace's death in season one.
Oh, Michael B. Jordan's back in the discussion.
Michael B. Jordan.
Finding his way back in.
And brought me to tears.
Bro.
Fair.
No, that's my first real heartbreaking TV. I remember crying. I remember watching it and being like, no, because it's everything about that scene.
Because there's so many layers to it as to why it's so heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking because A, he dies. Like, he was like a genuine kind of like, and I think you made a slight mention of it, like the innocence of children.
Yeah. Mm.
Where all three of them, they grew up together. They grew up in the worst conditions possible. Like, and in season one, I think McNulty makes a mention of like, why do these kids live in these like abandoned houses at the end of the day? It's just like, because they ain't got nothing else.
It's their home.
It's their home. They got nothing else. And like, you spend so much time with Wallace, you know, from, you know, being in the drug game, trying to make it out. But he's actually like a smart kid. Mm-hmm. And D'Angelo taking him under his wing. And then obviously as time goes on, like Wallace gets turned and so on and so forth. And is looking to, what's the word I'm looking for? Testify.
Yeah,
against the Barclay family. And then obviously Avon then making the decision to kill him, but D'Angelo then being like, yo, don't kill him. Like, Wallace's death has signified so many things for quite a few characters. Like, D'Angelo's finally kind of like seeing Avon for the heartless guy he is. Mm-hmm. But also,
To an extent. Because they actually layer Avon quite beautifully across the two and a half seasons that he's in, because season two is not really as present.
Yeah, no, I guess
I do get you
in the context of the season at that point, right? And then but also for his I can't remember his two
Poots. Best
friends, Poot and
Bodhi,
right? And like that last episode that they have with him, because they know they were about to kill him, so they take him out to McDonald's or whatever fast food chain, have a conversation about it, and then like Wallace not knowing what the fuck is going on, but he's like, like that conversation of them being like, yo, you know, we came through from the mud, like we made it and stuff like that. Not made it, but like, I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
It's them emptying the house and making sure none of the kids are there, yeah?
None of the kids are there.
And he's going around looking for like his siblings, like where is everyone? And it's them like, neither of them wanted to shoot him.
Yeah. No. What I will say is, all right, because I think at the end, right, when they are actually shooting him, because...
he weeds himself.
Who was it? Poot is the one who actually pulls the trigger, but... Bodhi was the one who was like had the gun on him, right? Mm-hmm. And you could tell he was not the one who wanted to pull the trigger. But Bodhi, out of the three, always seemed like the leader.
Yeah.
But Poot, who you would have thought was the dunce out of the three, mm-hmm. kind of like took the job. He took the responsibility of offing his best friend. He like took the gun, kept shooting him and whatnot. And then like, oh man, so heartbreaking. And I think what Wallace has represented for so many characters, like it gave them the change, like when you transition into season two, where Poot is now running the pit and he's like a more serious guy now, right?
Mm-hmm.
as he was in the first season. He was a little bit dopey. He was a little bit like, a dopey might be a bit of a harsh word, but he was a bit simple.
Yeah.
Simple's crazy.
He grows up a bit after season one.
Yeah, and he grows up. And I think that's the moment that made him grow up. And I also think that for Bodhi, in that sense, it kind of like breaks a piece of him a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where you then see later on in the season where he's like shattering a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think,
Also, he probably felt a need to keep like a particular look and aesthetic and character that maybe isn't necessarily even him in the first place, but because of
this Bodhi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because of the world he's in and the position that he wants to be in, the way he's been, because he aspires to be like Avon. He even mentions it in the episode, can't remember the particular episode, I think it's it's not the buys, it's the episode where D'Angelo's teaching them about the drug game and the Barkstar organization, and he's teaching them about the chess pieces and the positions that you can be in, and he's like, you can be kingpin like Avon, like he aspires to be that. It's only later on when you see how damaging this world is and how damaging the system that's been created for you is that he starts to realize he might want to escape.
Yeah, so exactly. What Wallace's character, like, for the limited amount, and I think it goes back to our conversation about Michael B as well, fantastic actor, and
it's a good show debut, I think. Yeah,
I want to say debut,
at least for it to be one of your first TV. Wait,
one of his like most pivotal first roles, but it wasn't his first role.
Wasn't he in Space Jam?
He was in something. He was in a couple other things before. He did like a thing with
Michael Jordan's kid. Obviously, he was a baby at the time. I want to say that. I want to say Space Jam.
Okay.
Unless no,
he was in like an other TV show. He did like an interview with Elle recently. They're playing a game.
Even on the back of What Is His Death, the scene that we get with D'Angelo and Stringer in the prison, and D'Angelo said, "Where's Wallace? Where's Wallace?
Yeah.
Where's that is one of my favorite scenes of the season as well. Proper heartbreaking.
Now Wallace is actually.
It's
him.
Dominant effect for a lot of things.
Yeah. I think it's also him like starting to. He became an addict. Like,
God,
and
yes.
that was the part that broke me first. Like, and it's them being like, I think it's D'Angelo being like, he wants to kind of like sort out the situation before like going to deal with it really. And let me just sort out in house, then I'll go and like seek outside advice. Yeah, and him being like, so what's the process? Like, how is he getting these drugs? What is he? Because his count's coming back correct every day. So what's up? So he's going downtown to go and get it. And that even then being like, is he snorting or is he injecting? Yeah, and I was like, oh my goodness. You see, I think it kind of just set me up to what the emotions I was going to have in season 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of like the school system and like just kids and kids in the drug game. Like, oh my gosh, teary-eyed. And then that being like his last few moments, and then him being like calling out all his siblings' names, being like, where is everyone?
Yeah, and they added the layers of his siblings quite like slowly but surely within the context of the rest of the episodes. It's not like you know about them straight away firstly, but slowly but surely we get to see he's got responsibilities that a child shouldn't have, which again, broken system. What's funny?
It's not funny. Apparently his first role was in Sopranos, according to IMDb.
Yeah, he played a Rideland King kid.
Hey, his CV is fucking...
And actually, to be think about it, I remember him giving an interview where he spoke about like his first... role was on something massive, and then he had to go and like just build up again.
That's impressive.
He went from Sopranos to The Wire. That's a hard working man.
That's an impressive thing. But I love the fact that, you know, no kid should have that responsibility, but we have heard or seen those stories before where children have to take on the responsibility of essentially adults, whether it's looking after your parents, looking after siblings, looking after grandparents. And again, broken system, broken homes, broken family.
Oh, wait, last thing on him. Do you remember the episode where, I think it's all leading towards his death, yeah? And he's like setting up all the lunches for his siblings, yeah? And then like, it's like he's doing it so routinely because he just has to do it every day because no one else is going to do it. Then him kissing his mum goodbye, yeah? And I think he gives her drugs or money, one of the two, yeah? And it's been like, oh my goodness, this is his life. Mm. And then two episodes later, he dies.
Yeah, is that one of your standouts from season one as well? Not standouts per se, because you liked it, but you know, as a seminal moment for the show.
Told you, teary eyed, man.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of what mine would be. It might be, it's not a seminal moment per se, but because he's one of my favorite characters, Prop Joe, the scene of him where we see him in the basketball scene towards the back of the season.
Yeah,
he played like that sort of coach mentor role throughout the rest of the seasons with the likes of Stringer, with Marlowe, Stanfield, yeah. or attempts to play the mentor role, mm-hmm. and does for the most part until Marlowe
says, becomes Marlowe.
Yeah,
Was it say I wasn't born to be somebody's nephew or something like that?
Essentially, what we were trying to say is that we ain't your you're little niggas.
Oh yeah, we ain't your little niggas.
Oh yeah, niggas, little niggas. Big, big, big homies.
But he's actually wearing
you.
He's actually suited up for that basketball game, which Avon mocks him for. But like that coach mentor role wasn't just like a thing of his character. It was also very much told to us through his aesthetic and what he was doing on that particular game. Because Avon was there swagged up with his, you know, he's probably wearing some grey bottoms and a t-shirt, gold chain. Whereas Prop Joe took that mentor role seriously. So it's a moment in the series that kind of always sticks out to me alongside the chessboard scene. And of course...
Avon reveal, because I thought they were going to lead up to it more, but it was like, that's just who he is. I was like, okay, I guess.
Oh, by the way, the scene of Avon driving away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stand out. On to season two.
We can breeze past this one.
I think it's underrated. I think because I'm just rewatching through it right now. Just off the bat, I think it's still the worst season out of all of them.
It's just not as bad as everyone
makes it out to be. I think the introduction of kind of like the Greeks and kind of like just like the port Donnies over there. Like
it's still a key part of Baltimore, even though to our community and people of our like, we may not care about that particular part of the world or the community, but for Baltimore as a story, it's still a key part.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it goes back to Manny's point about Baltimore being a character. It just adds another layer of depth to it. And I think as well, like, I think in the Sinners episode, Bisola spoke something about like hierarchy and whatnot. And I do think that like within the crime world, there's still this hierarchy where, you know, you've got the pits and
the towers
which is like, okay, that's where the black people hang out, right? Whereas the port, that's the white man's thing. This is where we move big product, you know, ships, mints and stuff like that. We're dealing with like international criminals here,
high level shit.
And like even the way the port guys talk about the people from the pit, from the projects and stuff like that, they're like, bro, like let them niggas shoot each other, like
who gives a fuck?
Who gives a fuck? But we're doing our thing. We're actually doing something like big. Like we're not messing with these little things. And I like how, you know, in the first season, Avon is the big bad, right? But then you put it into the context of, oh, he is just a fish in a huge pond.
Yeah.
And I quite like that at the moment as well.
And also that introduction of the Greeks goes to show again, as you mentioned, like criminality isn't at one level.
Mm.
Criminality extends to the very, very top, which we kind of see more so in season three, four, and five.
Yeah.
But we get to see that, well, these guys are getting the drugs from somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm. They're not just selling, they're not manufacturing drugs by themselves. They're getting it from somewhere, which plays into the whole system thing. Manny, any thoughts on season two for you?
Nothing that Jason hasn't already touched on. I do think like it's an important season, like we said, to show us the whole landscape of what happens.
A wider landscape, innit?
Yeah. What happens in the seasons coming after that. But yeah, definitely the weakest, but not as bad as even I myself made out to be.
Mm. But it's season three. Actually, no, I'm gonna let you.
Thank you.
I know.
Let you get your heat off.
No, because she loves season four, so I'll save that. I'll save that one.
Reading my bag.
I think season four is the best as well. Yeah. Amsterdam politics is like season three. Probably is where the show really takes a step up. Not from a perspective of the fact that I didn't enjoy season one, but you now see the interlinkings between one, two, and three through the politics through Carchetti.
Yeah.
Carchetti's character. Who plays Carchetti again? Aidan Gillen. Obviously, he plays Littlefinger in Game of Thrones. I forgot for a second, so I had to like lock back in. I really enjoyed season three. I really enjoyed season three because we got to see a different side to some of the police. So, Kiz, I need you to research for me the police officer. In The Wire in season three, he's the mixed race guy and his partner's the white guy.
Cool.
I don't know his government name, but I know he's talking about. Which isn't very helpful right now, is it?
But there's a huge shift in his character that we see where he becomes a bit more empathetic when he's seeing how dangerous the drugs are and how much it's impacting the black community.
Yeah.
And even how desperate, is it Coville that he became in terms of implementing Amsterdam as a means of, I guess, policing and looking after something that's out of control. There's nothing you can do to stop this. So let's see if we can control it.
Yeah. Are you talking about Seth Gillum, as in the guy that played, he was also in The Walking Dead?
Seth Gillum.
What's his character name?
Do you mind turning the camera around?
Yeah, let's see the laptop, mate.
Yeah.
Right, he looks so different now, man.
Yeah. He's aged quite nicely.
Yeah. Oh, for real, skin looks good.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed season 3. I really enjoyed the implementation where we got to see Carchetti wants to make a big difference in Baltimore. He's got these grand plans that he can be the guy to change Baltimore as a city, which I think speaks to like the world we live in as a whole, where people go into politics maybe with the right intentions and the right ideas in some instances. But there's a system much bigger than you that's going to always end up blocking your aims and your ambitions. Any thoughts on season 3 for you guys?
I think it's my favourite season. The introduction, like you said, of Aidan Gillen give like a completely different perspective of what the show actually is. Because I think when you watch the first two seasons, you don't really, really clock that it's trying to showcase different parts of Baltimore.
It's not clear.
Yeah,
it's not.
When you get to season 3 and the politics side of things, and even Idris Elba's character, Stringer Bell, his interaction with politics... Dave? Clay Davis. Shit.
I don't know how a character can be so important and sort of seminal with, like, you know, he's not in every episode, he's not in every scene, but still such an important part.
Because we see the effects of what he does to the whole city of Baltimore, especially with characters like Stringer Bell that gets, excuse the pun, gets strung along.
He got manipulated to a T, man.
And he's usually the one doing the manipulation because he's playing a completely different ball game. But I think what makes season 3 so great and enjoyable and memorable for me is that obviously went away from the crime family, eventually went back in, but with new characters. We had Slim, we had...
Slim Charles is,
I think, is such an amazing written character. We had even when Stringer's Bell interaction with politicians and tried to get him killed. The one this thing hard is like, we need to kill this politician, and then my guy comes back in, even Boxer comes back in, is like, bro, we're not gonna assassinate a politician because he stole some money off you. To showcase just how small of a fish he is in a much bigger pond, because although these people are who they are in the level of Baltimore criminals, there's so many people higher than you that are making more money off of these illegal activities. Instead. Let me use that word instead. Or these illegal activities, and it showcases just how messed up the system actually is. And like you mentioned, Aidan Gillen's character attempts to try to sort things out, but I think there's a line that he has that he keeps eating shit because he actually can't do anything because there's so many things that he needs to sort out before he's even able to do any good. And that even aids to the corruption that eventually sweeps into politics. What a sweep in has already been there. And yeah, I think it's just a great look into how characters as individuals get affected being part of the system, even if your heart isn't in the right place.
We can all be corruptible.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're...
Despite our greater hopes.
I think it just reminds me of like that thing where it's just like absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you aren't
tea.
But you aren't like nobody's exempt from it. Like, and there are so many things. Like I just love how it is fucking hell. All right. This is gonna be the take of the year. It's so real that I'm being sarcastic. I was being very like in the sense that with like you got so many people, like as you were saying, like with somebody trying to come in with good nature, but like the corruption is just too powerful. And like you see that in real life constantly. Like I don't want to, okay, let's not stick it too much to in real life, but you see it with everyday politicians, somebody who does try to kind of like is that somebody who does try to kind of like come in good, but then like for one reason or another, obviously from the outside looking in, we don't know what has happened as to why they cannot deliver on those promises. But The Wire and season 3 kind of like shows us what potentially does happen as to why good natured people turn the way they turn. And yeah, it's as like, even though it's a fictional story, it is so real at the same time.
Yeah,
it's very honestly written.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's two moments that also, like, I really enjoy from season two, which I forgot to mention. One of them is D'Angelo Barksdale's funeral, where, again, sorry guys, Prop Joe comes with a proposition to Stringer. And Stringer, at the time, I still feel like he feels like he has the higher up or the upper on Prop Joe.
Mm.
But Prop Joe has got the essentially the better drugs, the better narcotics to sell. Mm. But he bargains and finds a way to infiltrate the Barksdale Towers, because that's where he's going to make most of his money. Again, it shows the wit and the smartness of Prop Joe to be able to sell something, an idea, to Stringer, and for them to both gain somewhat whilst also getting the upper hand. And the other aspects of Stringer I find really interesting is obviously the macroeconomics when he starts taking lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, he starts forming like, what's the word I'm looking for? He starts taking counsel with the other members of the Barksdale organization. He's trying to like legitimize himself and the Barksdale organization, even though you can only do that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
He's dealing with some hard niggas, man. Just some N words.
To see when they're in the figgy. In the no, you're taking notes on a criminal organization. Not that one. Not even that one. That one's hilarious, but it's later. It's when they're in the thingy and he starts faxing to block the sound because he realised that they're being. Wiretapped, yeah. And just like, Weebo's like, that meme, that meme. But that conversation, he's talking about product and he's like, he's trying to break it down. He's like, listen, the product, da 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 da. And Weebo's like, whoa, this nigga's spitting. Like, and all he's really saying is that we need supply and demand in order for the market to work. Yeah. He's not saying anything revolutionary, but Weebo's like,
very
yo.
Basic economics. Yeah. Basic economics.
He's doing the Jay-Z thing. That nigga says the most basic shit. For just eat sauce.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna let you have that one.
Thank you.
You're not gonna have that one.
What? No.
That's incorrect.
Okay. One of your favorite scenes.
Which one?
Season two.
Oh, season two, God?
Yeah. I think is Omar in court.
Oh, was that season two? Yeah, with a tie.
With a tie. With a tie.
Every man has to have a code. Every man has to have a code. What was he? Who was he snitching on? Was he snitching on D'Angelo?
No, it was Bird.
My memory of it.
Bird. I think his name is Bird. Yeah, bald guy.
The bald, that look like Shine.
Yeah. That is one of my. Almost one of. I was even gonna get onto him about season three. Almost probably my favorite character.
You've got the gun. I've got the gun. You've got the briefcase.
Yeah. That's one thing that The Wire does really well. Like, holds up a mirror to America.
Mm-hmm.
Showcasing, yeah, that these black kids within the projects are committing crime. But it's also a reflection on how the police department works, how solicitors or lawyers work.
He's one of the most corruptible lawyers, by the way. He's a big piece of shit.
But yeah, and that scene with Omar in the court scene just highlights it. And I remember it takes him by surprise as well.
Mm.
The lawyer, because I think he says, "Oh yeah, well, so what about you? Like, you're literally here, like aiding criminals, but you're trying to pin on me because I got a criminal past." When you're essentially doing the exact same thing. But yeah, almost character writing in The Wire. Rest in peace, Michael K. Williams, was absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Why so? Other than, sorry, Biss, didn't mean to. Was you going to say something?
Yeah, but I was going to get into him later, but we can do it now.
We can do it now, moving on to season three as well, because I think his character is very well nuanced. In a world where survival is everything, Omar definitely has his own ethos and his own ethics in terms of how you're meant to live your life, and I think that's showcased throughout the season. And he's a very vulnerable character, and also because Omar is a gay character in the show, I've never seen that in a TV show, and I really do appreciate when TV or film in general like take risks to an extent,
especially the actor as well.
Yeah, because Michael K. Williams really made it a whole thing. There wasn't like any sex scenes, kissing scenes written in, and he did say like, "Listen, gay people have sex."
Yeah,
he's like,
yeah.
His exact words to the showrunners were like, "Gay people fuck. So if you want to make me gay, I have to actually be gay
in order
for me to also have that authority over people and be better than everyone else, and also be seen as like still a gangster and still feared."
Mm-hmm.
I gotta be shagging.
Yeah,
and him doing that and going all out. Apparently, he actually just told them like, "Listen, we'll do this scene and we'll let you know what happens." Asked for the consent from the other actor. He said, "Cool." And that was the first time they lipsed, and sex was written in to Omar's character moving forward after that moment.
Yeah.
But right there.
No, such a brave moment as well, like just from his part as well. It's like, as you said, like we've never seen that on television before, and I think it, especially like if we take it into context, like this is a, on the outside, as far as I understood it from watching interviews, like this guy is a very traditional kind of like, I guess, strong black male, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And to make himself so vulnerable and like, for better or worse, how homosexuality is seen within the black community, like him kind of like having that duality of like, yo, I can be vulnerable with the people that I love and be who I am, but also fuck a nigga up if I have to.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I goes, yeah, no. R.I.P. Really, that's all, yeah. Yeah,
really well written, man.
He's, I think he's one of the best written characters I've ever seen on TV. Yeah, that's certain. and he's also one of the only few characters where their sexuality has pushed the story along, number one, but also been used correctly. I was watching a show the other day and they made a character a lesbian and it was really, really pointless. And it made me realise when it's done badly, it's done so badly. But when it's done well, you get one of the greatest characters ever, like Omar. And it's the only time I've seen... the first time I saw homosexuality written into a character and being like, this was actually necessary, but also it was done well.
Yeah.
And again, thanks to Michael Williams, because he kind of is the reason that happened.
Yeah. There's season three, Dennis Cutty as well, I think, is such an interesting character because we hadn't met him before, right? He's kind of introduced as a new character, but he had existed in the Barksdale organisation. And there's a scene where he goes to Avon Barksdale and he does so quite... begrudgingly, because I don't think he thinks Avon's going to give him any money, because he tells Avon, I don't want to be part of this anymore. I'm out. I want to change my life around. I want to sort of help my community, which we have seen before. We know of people who might reform themselves after prison, and I think he wanted to do that for himself. And he goes to Avon and asks for the boxing gym money, right?
Yeah.
And Avon gives it to him, but gives him more. And Avon's like, I can give you everything that you
want.
Yeah.
Take it, take it. And I love that sort of the other side to Avon we got to see, where yeah, he's a flawed man. He's greedy, he's selfish, he's disrupting and causing harm to his community. But he also does care about his community, but also very much self-indulgent at the same time. That's the duality of human beings. We are multifaceted. We aren't necessarily good or bad. There is a grey area between us as people. And I think getting to see that about Avon was great to see.
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, yeah, no. Nothing to add. Perfect.
And then the scene with him and Stringer. Man.
By the rooftop.
Yeah.
Saying bye to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind of brings me to the other character that was introduced into season three.
Yep.
Brother Mozo.
I love him.
Yeah, man. That is one of the funnest characters I've come across. Even his little sidekick that was always there right next to him. He was so cool.
Early on, Cheese actually mocks him, remember?
Yeah.
Because in season two, Cheese is like, who's this guy with his suit? Like, am I supposed to...
Yeah.
Mad.
Serious guy.
Yeah, and serious the interaction guy that we get between him and Omar. Yeah, because Omar's such a well-written character. And Brother Mozone? I'm sure I'm saying the right
name. Brother Mozone.
Brother Mozone.
I thought you can trust me after the whole Proctor situation.
Mal, you got it.
And how both of them definitely have like a code that they feel like they should live by. And then for a character like Stringer Bell to essentially like spit on that code, even when he tried to get Omar... Like, so even talking about Avon Box though, in terms of like, he's a flawed character.
He had a code, man.
But he had a code. He definitely had an understanding of how people should treat each other to an extent.
So the Sunday thing, for example.
So when even tried to get Omar got on a Sunday,
he's like, what?
And everyone started flipping out. The issue with Shingo Bell is that he didn't respect other people, which I think that's the difference.
And he thought he was smarter than
everyone. I think that's the thing. And you really do see it within season three. Where he doesn't realise he is.
Oh, because when Clay, when his lawyer tells him about Clay Davis has been stringing him along all that time, pun intended, it kind of tells you how flawed he is, and his perception of himself isn't necessarily a reflection of who he actually is.
It showed us so much to Stringer Bell, and like, this is where I'll give Idris Elba like all the credit in the world in that. But I've said this before on record. But like, the fact that like, just because he goes to community college, just because he's trying to kind of like on the outside trying to better himself, like when it comes to the white man's game, like as a black person, you're always going to be kind of like a step behind, no matter how much you want to kind of like go for it, because there's going to be people with more money, more power than you, like at all times. And I think it's just such a well written show, man.
Sugar Bell basically said, "I'm not black, I'm OJ."
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, literally.
It's still nigga.
Basola, season.
Oh my god, season 4 of The Wire is all about the school system and how children are affected by the drug game. I think one of the first episodes in that season is when a young girl gets killed by a shootout on the road. Is it that season? Season 4? What happens?
Sounds feasible.
I
haven't watched it.
It is that, because that's when all the kids start, they think everyone's like snitching because all the kids are blah blah blah. Anyways, one of the first episodes in that season, and one of the earlier scenes in the app, is a young girl is, so there's a shootout on the road, and it's like they all had kind of a protocol. So the shot is like going through everyone's houses and everyone's like ducking or going on hiding, blah blah. She's getting ready for school. Her mom keeps saying like, "Get ready, da 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 da." Yeah, she's getting ready for school, but she stands by the window. Yeah, and then after the shootout's done, her mom's like, "Okay, you ready now?" Like, and the worst part about that is that she kind of knew, like, it's fine that the shootout's happened. It's like, oh, that's happened. All right, everyone ready to go to school?
Yeah.
And that's really one part in itself. But my mom goes upstairs and she's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that starts the police investigation into like the new part of the organisation award, because that triggers it, because it's like an unliving of a young girl for no reason. Yeah. Now, that set me up for the rest of the season, and I knew it was going to be teary-eyed, because that alone of her mum being like, get ready for school, there's a shootout, then being like, everyone okay, let's get ready to go to school. Now being like, we could take a break from a shootout and still get you to go ready to school. And then them being in school and there's a police officer there. I guess it's quite common for most schools, but the way the police officer was there and the just increased like police presence each time they would get into school.
Even Prez himself, who was a police officer.
Yeah.
And your feeling on Prez prior to that is you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely got some racial bias towards you. Who's very flawed. He had perceptions of young black children who were in this sort of environment. And he finds himself in the school system, and the school system reinforms his perception of the world that he's been living in his entire life.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's watching kids with promise, just like their lives going away because they're crack babies.
Yeah.
Or like they literally, they can't do anything.
Hey, Dookie, man.
Like Dookie, like, is really smart. Dookie's really smart. He's really interested in computers. Like, he could be really great. But the reason he's called Dookie is because he smells like shit. And the reason he smells like shit is because his parents can't afford to look after him. Dookie's storyline is one that made me cry the most.
Yeah.
That last scene, when he goes back to the school, starts from when he has season 5. Yeah. But honestly, just watching the school system and watching, some of them have to be on the roads because that's the only way they can actually make money. Yeah, but being like, I can't do this. I'm not scary. I don't like drugs. I can't sell. Like, all the key components to do it.
Naimon, man.
Like, it's not in me. I really can't do this.
Naimon's writing.
All of you, but yeah, God.
I just really enjoyed the fact again, the show reflects real life. We've all seen and know either like people we've been close to growing up or children we've seen now as adults. We know those children who are like putting on a facade to live a particular life that's not actually really them. If anything, really smart, really intelligent, mm-hmm. have a lot of promise, but end up trying to replicate either family, friends, parents, things that they see in social media. They're trying to replicate a life that isn't necessarily them, and they don't have to live. I love the fact that Weebay tells his mum, no, let him be who he's going to be. He doesn't need to be like me. Look where I am now. I'm in prison.
Yeah.
But his mum's so insistent on him being like Weebay.
Soldier.
Yeah. And he ends up finding a home with Colvin? It's Colvin, I think. Is it Colvin? Let me double check.
Weebay is also excellent, just to add as well. Like, I know he gave us an iconic meme, but like Weebay as a character is so, so good. Like,
It's Colvin. Sick. Yeah, man. Great writing.
I don't feel like any character in The Wire felt like a waste.
Yeah.
I feel like if they brought
is there someone you would have liked to have known more about?
It's because I liked him, but Brother Muzone, but no, really. I think he served his purpose not knowing much about him. That was the whole point of it.
I think the mystery around it as well. Because like, I think you get a lot of Brother Muzone, who he is, mm-hmm. through his representation.
Yeah.
And his code.
And his code as well. Like, especially the way he dresses and probably correct me if I am wrong. Like, I do get this kind of like.
He came from New York, right?
Black Israelites.
Yeah, that's but, the one. But I think he was thinking of a different name. Black Israelites, definitely. But
Black Israelites, but like
something Muslims, House of Muslim.
Like, where
Nation, Nation of Islam.
Nation of Islam. Nation of Islam. Nation of Islam. Yes.
Of course. What do you mean, he's Muslim?
I don't know.
But, what did you mean by that?
But like through his representation, you instantly saw, okay, yeah, that's Nation of Islam. Like,
yeah.
Like, even the name, Brother Muzon. Like, and I think we don't need much storytelling because the way he presents himself tells us so much already.
And that's it. So I just liked him, so I'd like to see him more.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was any character. There's only characters I wanted to see less, definitely. Yeah, McNulty.
I can't lie. I think he's a great character, man.
No, I think he's great, but I just don't care about him. It's kind of how I feel. You guys all watch Snowfall, right?
Yeah.
I haven't finished it.
First three seasons.
So, the Fed in Snowfall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the CIA harsh. Guy, yeah.
That's harsh.
I could have seen them less.
Yeah.
Truth is, I actually care about all the other characters more. And it's not that they're bad. I just care about them. So, McNulty, like, him being a shitty dad and alcoholic and a shitty husband, I'm like, I kind of knew that already. Can you, like, pan to Stringer?
I guess so, yeah.
And I think that's what it was for me.
I found him to be one of the most interesting characters in the show. Firstly, because he is the lens for like, the white audience from a perspective of what is ongoing in Baltimore and the struggle and the strife. He kind of probably represents some of their perceptions as well. He does also want to do good, and that
naivete, I would add.
That, alongside, for sure, alongside his frailties as a human being, like, he's always driving to do good, but he will go to the extra mile to do good to the point it's detrimental.
Yeah.
And I think we see that mostly in like season 5. But before that, he goes on a bit of an arc in season 4 where he becomes a street cop again. And he finds himself immersed in his community that he's working in. Rather than being the guy that's doing the crime scene investigations and so on and so forth, he's actually a beat cop. He's living it day to day. And I think we get to see a different perspective of him, which is kind of why I found season 5 a tough one with his character, because he goes the extra mile to try and solve this, to sort of bring down criminality as a whole, but goes way too far.
Mm-hmm. But it's him reminding you that no matter how good he is still a white man in power and abusing his power. I think that's what I really liked about season 5 of McNulty. Yeah. He's reminded me that no matter how good you are, going out of your way to do the
wrong thing.
Yeah. The right thing, the wrong way,
yeah,
can still, like, beat your ass. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah. There's a scene he has with Bodhi in season 4 where they're both sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
Is it the bench that they're
in? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in the park.
They're talking about cool stuff, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic scene. Bodhi's a great character.
Oh, Bodhi's bro, great. Yeah. This show has a lot of well-written characters. Yeah.
Before we get to let's do season 5 first and then we'll maybe rank some characters. Season 5, I wouldn't say it was a drop down. Per se,
I think when you have the highs of season four,
truly is the best thing. Season 4 was the reason I kept going.
I mean, there's one season left.
I know, but I thought
in life. Do you mean in life?
Okay.
Damn.
I think season 5 gave a good closure for the show, though. It ended really well.
Yeah.
And of course, it implements sort of media and again how different fragments of the system and community all lead towards the world that we live in today.
Yeah.
So, as you mentioned, Manny, they're all interlinked.
Yeah.
All of the stories are interlinked and the systems are interlinked, and they all kind of tell or shape the world that these characters are living in. And as you said, Baltimore becomes a character because of those added layers. Because of the school system, because of politics, because of the ports, because of media, Baltimore becomes a character in and of itself.
There was a scene in season 5 when we are in the news house or whatever.
You want to talk into the microphone, maybe?
News house or whatever. And that he just did was crazy.
I know.
Double hands as well.
You know what? I've deep dived into your bed.
3,000 twister combo.
What am I doing?
Double grip. Crazy. You're a professional.
Okay, man.
There's a scene.
You have to have a lot of... Sorry.
That's a lot of grip. What is going on? I'm sorry, let's move on. Anyways.
No, this guy's next to me doing it repeatedly.
That's crazy.
There's a scene in season 5 in the news house after Omar gets killed by a child, and then the news hits,
really important.
Yeah, the news hits the desk of somebody. So, oh, somebody just got murdered. It's like, oh, just shove it at the back of the newspaper, something like that. And just showcase just how little life is valued in Baltimore because it happens so many times. I remember someone there's like a tweet, someone says, oh, it's, if one person dies, it's a tragedy. If a million people die, it's a statistic. Mm-hmm. So, I know it wasn't English, but you know what I'm trying to get to.
No, we're with you.
I was like,
tragedy.
Thank you. But yeah, it just highlights the how often death happens within Baltimore and how little people care about because of how normalized it's becoming. I feel like that one scene alone of him just saying, no, just shove it, just shove that story at the back of the newspaper, just highlights how little, like, not them as an individual, but just as a institute and just as a city, how little they care about the lives of these individuals because so many of them pass away on a regular basis.
Mm. Yeah. Also, Omar being killed by a child was so important because it just showed that no one could actually kill him except for someone doing it by accident. And
the person you least expect to try and get him.
Like, cause I remember when Omar died, I was just like,
no, it just he's not happened dead so quick and out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was
as
like,
well.
Oh, he's not dead for real. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, wait, that's the end of this. Season 4, man. Crazy good.
How did you feel about Marlo before I get into our favourite characters?
You didn't like Marlo. I liked Marlo as a character.
I think Marlo's an important character. I don't like Marlo.
Oh, I don't like him as
yeah, I don't like Marlo in the sense that, like,
some way
I like what he represented.
Yeah.
Well, do you not like him as a character or you don't like him as a person?
I found it hard to believe. I don't know what it was with me, but I found it hard to believe that he was this big, foreshadowing, overbearing figure in Baltimore that he was portrayed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like the fact he represented like a new school of gangster, of kingpin in Baltimore, who every time a new generation comes through from at least in my lifetime, they tend to be a lot more rebellious. Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to being in a world of criminality, they're a lot more rebellious, a lot more willing to go towards deeper and further lengths to get what they need to do. A lot more violent, a lot less code-based, which Avon grew up on and Prop Joe would have grown up on, where Marlo, no code. Mm. That's why he's willing to take Prop Joe gone quickly, without any thought, without any care. Mm. So I liked what he represented rather than him per se. In the show, I found it hard to believe.
I really like Marlo. I like the winning the winning show. That my name is my name. That's my favorite Marlo scene. But even him as a character, even you mentioned about the no code stuff, is the scene with the security guard,
lollipop.
The lollipop when he steals the lollipop and then walks outside, and the security guard's like, "Bro, like I'm a man. This is my job. You can't just like you're looking in my eye." Robbing the place.
Violating me,
yeah. You're violating, you can't do that. And then he's like, oh, so you're stepping to me. He's like, no, I'm just trying to chat to you. Just don't do that. And then eventually we find out that the bodyguard gets killed out of nowhere because it was Chris that would have done it. And then there's like a few scenes afterwards, a few episodes afterwards, sorry, they're talking about all the deaths that Marlon could be part of. And the security guard comes up and it's like, oh, that has nothing to do with Marlon. I'm pretty sure, maybe I'm getting wrong, saying that it's got nothing to do with Marlon because it's not linked to anything, because he's a normal, hard-working guy that goes to work every day, but goes back to your what you said about Marlo with no code, because you're not meant to be killing civilians for the sake of your own pride and your own vanity. But yeah, I found that really interesting.
Snoop as well. A lot of people love Snoop's entry into season 3. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, you did not like Snoop?
No, I'm just saying a lot of people talk about the Snoop opening scene for season 3.
What was the opening scene? Was it in the shop?
Yeah. He goes and buys the
crystal.
Yeah.
I think the Snoop and Chris duo, my favourite duo.
Remind me of Snoop, please.
She's the woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Got my favourite accent ever.
Yeah.
She's got the thickest.
How does my hair look?
No, she's got the thickest Baltimore accent. It's perfect.
Yeah.
What's our favourite? Do you want to do favourite characters first? Let's do that.
Before we get to favourite characters, I want to get onto a scene with Michael where...
because we kind of skipped 4-ish here. Go ahead.
Yeah. So with... Obviously, when we are introduced to them in season 4 as the kids, and they have like this big day together on a summer's day, and they end up like beefing some random other teenagers, like from...
On the front piss in the water bottle.
Yeah, the fruit piss.
That's quite early on in season 4, yeah.
Yeah. And they're obviously laughing and joking.
The innocence and stupidness of children.
Of kids. And then from season 4 and season 5, so much happens, especially with Michael. Michael's obviously was abused when he was younger, and now he's in the last few years or however long that period is, he's been involved in gang violence, he's been killing quite a lot of people, robbing a few people, and essentially becomes the new Omar. There's a scene where he drops Dookie, like at the end of season 5, when he drops Dookie off.
Yeah.
When he drops Dookie off, that's the last time then to interact. And Michael's just stone faced, and he drops off his little brother to his auntie's house because he's on the run, people trying to get him. And then Dookie's reminding Michael of the day of them going, and then even going to the fair afterwards. I was like, and Dookie's laugh is like, do you remember that, Michael? And Michael's like, no, I don't remember that. Like his whole innocence, his whole childhood is completely gone.
Yeah.
He's actually completely gone now because of the life that he's been forced to live to an extent. And I think I really, like, that is one of the most heartbreaking scenes, that how do you not remember the joys of you being a child?
Mm-hmm.
You actually don't remember you have no memory of you being a child and being happy. All you remember is that, like, the worst parts of your life.
And the thing with memory as well, like, it does become hazy over time, but the fragments can still be so important to you. Even if you don't remember clearly everything that happened in that particular day or moment or that second, the fragments of it can still sit with you over time. And the fact that he's got none of that,
none,
is saddening.
You're supposed to remember, like, how, like, you can't remember verbatim, but, like, you remember how you felt.
Yeah.
And the fact that he doesn't remember how, like, at least how far he felt, is. And like, yeah, perfect. Yeah, no, legit.
Abyss, who's your favourite characters in the show?
So Stringer.
Dookie. I don't know why she laughed like that. No, oh, because of Idris. Okay.
Stringer, Dookie, and I can't really say Wallace, can I? Because he was there for all of 5 seconds.
I mean, you can.
You can.
But honestly, Wallace, because he represented. My love for Wallace is my love for season 4.
No, that makes any sense. Yes, so, I do.
Yeah.
Because Wallace, we saw an older version of season 4 kids.
Yeah. Wallace. And I think that's what it was. It was just like, I love when, a minute tangent, I love when stories tell a greater, I love when shows tell a greater picture of, what is the sentence I'm trying to say? I love when, don't worry guys, it's fine.
So,
I can't get
trying
this.
Trying to go in line of like foreshadowing or?
No, it's like, We know drugs are bad. We know it affects everyone. Yeah. But there's always like a small section of society that always gets ignored. Yeah, when you look at the greater picture. Mm. And a family home, yeah, your parents are crack babies, but also your parents are crack addicts. But who's being affected here? The kids still have to do regular things like go to school, learn, walk, talk. A lot of them can't do that.
Mm.
And I think it's almost overlooked a tiny bit. And the fact that it only came in season 4 kind of shows how overlooked it is.
Yeah.
The fact that we saw the government, bureaucracy, we saw all of that before we even saw the effects, the immediate effects of drugs.
The wider effects we were on about.
Yeah, like, yeah. You didn't see the immediate effects until season 4. It's like, damn, you really just forgot about a whole section of society.
But I guess it's like,
but it's perfect. It was
it's
also
perfect because it's such a reflection of real life.
Yeah.
Like we talk about like, oh yeah, we know drugs are bad, but you know, we never really talk about like how it's affecting the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, well, let's not get too deep, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Jason, any standout characters for you?
I think Wallace as well, Omar, and it's hard choice. I'm going to go for, like, in my opinion, like an underrated one, just to throw it out there, because I don't think it'll be in anyone else's, D'Angelo.
Okay, yeah, it's justified.
Yeah. My one's probably Michael, Omar. I really like Kima.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kima's great.
Yeah, I think she was really great. Probably my favorite police officer.
And they made attempts to add layers to her as the season went on. Her relationship with her girlfriend, and then not initially wanting the child that they ended up adopting. Was it IVF?
I think it was adopting. I don't remember. Oh, no, she might have been pregnant, the other one, right?
I feel like she was pregnant.
Yeah, I feel like she was.
But I remember her around the stomach, but I don't know if
they I want to give a slight honourable mention as well to, what's
Lester.
Name?
Oh, Lester's great.
Because I was going to get to Lester first.
Lester, yes, but homeless dude. Did
Bubbles.
Oh my god, Bubbles story. Bubbles story. Oh my god, he is again another representation of a person who's just the system has failed.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to do good, and even like Bubbles' friend, white guy.
I think it was AIDS, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Mm-hmm. Have any of you guys seen Kids?
No.
Okay, the white guy is a kid's fantastic film, by the way. It's just literally a story about like a group of teenagers and
Jonah Hill. Is it on about?
No. This is like a film that came out in the 90s or whatever. The main character is the white boy, like Bubbles' friend, passes away. But yeah, I would argue a lot of inspiration came from kids. That show, from kids as well. Do watch Kids if you ever guys have the chance.
I shall. Guys, who are your top three?
I want to hear Kids.
Top three, Omar. I love Marlo. And I don't know why you didn't talk more about him, but I love Marlo. I think his ending is, it's so bittersweet as well. Like, you get Stringer's ending, but you can see he wanted just the rep, because that last scene of him, when he got them and they don't remember him. They don't know his name. So everything he wanted just went. And then if I had to go for number three, more so because of, I like Slim because of the fact that he kills cheese.
Yeah, because
I didn't like.
I hated him.
I was like, yeah, someone got him. Good.
Cheese was a piece of shit to his to his uncle. Like, Pop Joe was my guy as well. That upset me, man. So yeah, good shout.
There's a funny scene with Cheese when they catch him on the wiretap, and he's crying about his dog. He said, "My dog died. I had to kill him. I had to kill my dog." And when they pull him out, they figure they're talking about a human being.
Yeah.
And then when they find out, it was actually a dog.
Good right.
Great scene, yeah.
Prop Joe, Stringer.
Omar.
He's a piece of shit, man. Prop Joe, Stringer. And for the sake of the show, it has to be Omar.
Yeah, see? I'm right. Prop Joe was a given, though.
Look, it's got so many...
But I did like Bunk. I thought Bunk was a great character.
I thought Lieutenant Daniels was also a great character.
Yeah,
character, like, from, especially when you see him in
Milkman,
season one.
Milkman.
Yeah, he started walking difference when he started fucking the white woman.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I don't know what them two were up to, but yeah.
Yeah, she was also with McNulty. She was moving crazy,
yeah, she's a terrible woman.
Hey, McNulty's a...
She's a ginger as well.
Okay.
Okay.
And what rating would we give the show as a whole?
Out of 10.
Would you give it a 10 out of 10?
I think it's one of the greatest shows ever.
Yeah, I think, like, talking about the characters now, like, generally, do you think there's a other show that has that many characters that you actually, like, think are well written? Like, that many? I don't think there is. Because I think there's bare characters that we didn't even mention.
Yeah.
That I feel like are really well written with very minimum time. Like, even Wallace is a very well written character and was there for one season.
Yeah. And so impactful as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's 10. Like, I think it's the best TV show ever.
Yeah, I agree. A 10. What's funny though is when the
not
first.
A five.
Huh?
Not a 5 star.
Nah, this is a TV show, man. They don't do that on Letterboxd. They don't do that on Letterboxd.
It's not a limited show, is it? Oh, you missed their beef.
That wasn't even me. That was his.
His was saying that. Limited TV shows. Limited series is not a TV show.
Okay.
And Manny was saying, obviously, the opposite.
You always sound
like... I'm going to stop arguing because I feel like I'm arguing with a child now.
With him, I am just like, I'm just disappointed sometimes. Like, you're better than that, man.
Nah.
Rating out of...
25.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fez.
Yeah, I'm like a 9.5. Only take that away... only take away the 5 because of season... 5 and parts of season 2.
Okay.
Fantastic show, man.
Even with season 2, I could still give it a 10 out of 10.
It's a 10 out of 10 for me.
Guys,
I'm not mad.
Season 2 is not that bad.
No, the thing is, it's not that bad, yeah. I adored season 1, yeah.
Okay,
through it so quickly, yeah, in like 2 days maybe. Yeah, season 2, I got through it in like a week.
Because it doesn't sound... Because there are
points that like that long, yeah.
Before a binge run.
For someone that was like... Like, engrossed in the show. And the fact that it was so good. The fact that it was so good, yeah. And I... Nigga, what?
Sorry, man.
The fact that it was so good and I still watched all of season 2 shows that it's so... Okay, I'm done. I love The Wire. That's it.
Okay.
Do we all agree, though, it's the greatest show ever?
Yeah.
There's nothing better than that.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything.
I mean, people only compare it to The Sopranos, what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
So,
I'm hearing a few people say Breaking Bad, but
I have Breaking Bad. I think that's Cap, man.
As someone that loves those shows and they're my top forever, nothing tops The Wire.
The Wire, I think, is the best TV show.
Until 7 season 3 comes out,
then we can decide. Then
we can decide. Then
yeah,
I think what we should do then is as of today, our number one show. If we're doing like a ranking, because we're going to try and do this quite often. The Wire is our number one.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's fuck it, yeah. It's a good episode. Who cares about Huss? Yeah, number one for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the majority anyway, so he ain't got no chance.
Oh, it's already been decided.
Yeah.
Okay, just like, we're going to run it by him?
No, not run it by him. At least consult him.
And of course, not that it will happen. These rankings can change based upon the rest of the episodes.
Yeah, of course.
So let's say we end up revisiting Severance at some point. Who knows, it might change. I don't even know what our next episode would be, because I feel like our tastes are all quite like different. I don't think everyone here's watched The Sopranos yet.
No,
me, I'm starting.
Okay.
Have you started or are you starting?
I'm starting.
Okay, let me start now because you'll catch up with me before I get anywhere. I got a DVD.
Should we try and make The Sopranos our next attempt for this one? Then?
Yeah, please do it. Can we all watch the show at the same time?
What's the time? 4 weeks?
Yeah. Once a month, I think.
Once a month?
Maybe next time we can do a film. Because that only takes one sitting. And while we do the film, we'll have a TV show that we can watch together.
So we'll watch
I love
how
this.
How long to watch all, what, six seasons?
Six seasons.
I've already finished my rewatch of season one.
How many episodes per season?
They change though, low key, a little bit.
But is it like, it's roughly like between 10 and 15?
That's more than 10.
Okay.
Per season.
Max is like 13 though.
No, for season six, there's like 20 episodes, 21 episodes.
How long? 40 to 50 minutes?
86 episodes altogether.
Jesus Christ.
How many?
86 episodes altogether.
So 13 for 5, for 4 there is 13, 13 for...
I can do this.
There's 13 up until season
six. Sopranos.
Yeah.
Cool. A month for The Sopranos, I will be there.
What's our agreed next film?
Can we just pick a hat if somebody picks their favourite film or something? Because I wouldn't mind doing The Prestige.
Can we do Legally Blonde, please?
Yeah, I can't. Let's run it. I've been meaning to watch it, actually.
Can we do Legally Blonde?
This is for the next episode?
I'll do my best.
Or...
Are we doing the whole series of Legally Blonde?
Look at us planning like.
Well, we can do all of them if we want to. So we've got Legally Blonde, Legally Blonde 2. Then we've got Legally Blondes.
Yeah.
And then you've got the musical as well.
Low-key, Legally Blonde, the court scene is actually one of the best court scenes in my life. Ever. It's so fire.
We'll do Legally Blonde. Okay.
Yeah, I can't wait.
By the way, I'm taking the bear out of Mount Rushmore and putting the Severance in.
See, that I can understand.
Yeah,
that,
I don't know why I said the Severance. Because I was thinking the bear.
You want you to know that he's serious, but it ain't a joke.
Over and out.
Over and out.
Yeah, play the background.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.